Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 45, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
For Monday, August 20th, 2018, my name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. O'Brien, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Graves!
Is that the grape stuffing?
That was my best attempt. It wasn't as good as yours, but...
You're a rich gray, and you've gone 2 miles, cause I know it don't matter, Zeit Gang. You can't rely on the orange man's money. You can't rely on the orange man's money.
Thank you to Master Yoda, or Hoda, at Joseph Race, for that, you know, Hall & Oates inspired, a.k.a. my favorite band. One of them.
I'm still not past the grape lady.
That was at least partially courtesy of the grape stomping lady, but also Jamie Loftus, who unintentionally did the grape stomping lady during vocal warm-up.
Oh, wait, Jamie, are you the guest?
We are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by...
Oh, yeah.
Wait, are you?
You are?
By Jamie Loftus.
Hi.
The great.
Happy birthday.
So great. Yeah. Thank you.
It's her birthday, but she'll always be Lil Zam to us.
Oh, you know? I'm never gonna be Ol Zam. I'll be Ol Zam
one day. Yeah.
You guys will push me out on an iceberg.
Joined by Ol Zam.
That'll be the thing piece that comes out. Is like, is it time to start calling Lil Zam
Ol Zam? There's no period where I'm just Zam.
No.
Right.
No.
Hell no. Jamie, we're thrilled to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
The night after your birthday.
I came in with my MF B-Day hangover. I'm here.
Yeah, and we're thrilled to have you.
Thank you.
We're going to get to know you a little bit better, but first, we're going to tell our listeners what they're in store for on this Monday morning edition of the Daily Zeitgeist.
Good morning.
Wake up. We're going to check in with the charts, see what people are reading, listening to, viewing. Googling, you know, all the things.
People still Googling?
Yeah, people still Googling.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
People always Googling. Then we're going to check in, see what Rudy had to say yesterday on Meet the Press with Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd. And it was...
He's a master of words.
Yes.
We have to give it to him at this point. He may have outdone himself this week.
Yeah.
He also looks like, I was saying to Miles this morning, he looks like the Men in Black villain who is just... Bugs wearing a skin suit. Like, it looks like his face is rotting off of his.
So the bug
skull.
From Men in Black is wearing a Rudy suit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mistakenly called him Edgar, and someone on Twitter corrected me. He's like, it's actually a bug wearing Edgar's skin.
Right.
So,
it's like a Frankenstein's monster kind of dilemma.
Exactly. Right. Rudy, your skin is hanging off your bones.
I'm optimistic that there's a better face underneath that one, and once this one finally drips
just
off.
Falls off. Just drips off.
He's shedding like a snake.
There's handsome, a hot man in there.
A handsome Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah.
And we're going to be joined by Right Wing Watch's Jared Holt.
Yeah.
Jared.
And we're also going to... try and diagnose our zeitgeist. Try and figure out what our quicksand is in the third act.
Mm.
That will make sense at the end. But first, Jamie, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Ooh, I was on one yesterday. Yesterday was my birthday, and I was just forcing people to do things they didn't want to do all day. I was like, I want to go to Dunkin' Donuts right now. And then I went there, and then I was like, I want to look at snakes at Petco. And so I looked at snakes at Petco because I feel like a snake owner. And so I was thinking about some search history, snake owner bonding. How can you
snake owner bonding?
How can you tell snake gender? Can you bring my favorite? Can you bring snake out with friends?
What's the answer to the last one?
The last one is a really sad search because you can. There are no laws in place that say no snakes, but it's like the snake owner Reddit board is very sad where they're like, you can bring your snake out, but there's a big public stigma against snakes in public.
Right.
They're like, if you have your snake out, no one's going to want to be around you and your snake. And then one guy was like, I'm moving out of my neighborhood because of the snake
The
stigma.
Snake hate is too much?
Too much snake hate.
Oh, right. Come on.
Which is like kind of a him thing, but can you bring snake out with friends? Yes, but at what cost?
Yeah, really.
You know?
But I appreciate what you're doing for the snake owning population, because when I picture snake owner, I picture lonely male. I don't picture
I want to queer the narrative of snake ownership a little bit. Right. Just kind of mix it up. And
like that tweet I called out last week of the Reductress one, that was just woman owns snake.
Wait,
yeah,
really?
That's right.
Yeah. No way.
Just like
I
big
know that.
Like, woman owns snake.
I was really excited. Yesterday I met a very sweet ball python, and I think I want to get a snake. Unfortunately, they do live for 30 years.
Wow. Ooh, that is an investment.
Well, yeah, the snake would really be with me for some time. But I'm thinking about maybe getting a starter snake, a little 3-footer who will live, 3 to 5 years, and then maybe return to the ball python for the 30th birthday. Maybe that's a gift I'll give to myself.
Yo, it's so funny. Now that I think about it, I had a homegirl who bought a little snake, a little albino, I don't know, it was a tiny little snake. And I don't know what the fuck happened to it. I don't know if she threw it away now that I think about it, I'm like, yo, I've seen her in a minute. And that snake, she brought it out. She was like, yo, look at my snake.
Look at my.
Don't know where the fucking snake has been.
I don't want to get a snake as a bit. I want to give myself the gift of long-term commitment to a snake.
I want to get a snake as a life partner.
I hate when people pimp their pets out on Instagram, the app. And just say, look at my cute little pet. And then when you see them together in person, they're like, oh, yeah, that's my snake. Whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of how I am with my kids.
Yeah.
It's just their Instagram props.
I mean, they're squeezing the life out of you a snake would. So, yeah.
Think about snakes.
I also wonder if life expectancy is different. Little albino snakes might not last quite as long.
Right. But I feel like you would be like, my snake died.
Right, that's true.
Rather than sort of a fade away and you're oh, we don't talk about what happened to
We don't talk about what happened to
Lena Dunham rescuing a dog.
Yeah, I hope snake abuse isn't rampant what I'm trying to say.
I don't know. I'm interested. I'm excited to. I think I am going to get a snake. And so, but I can't decide what to name it. So if the Zeitgang has any ideas for good snake names.
Prepare your mentions.
My mentions are going to be full of snake
Your
names.
Phone will
melt. Will you feed it live rodents?
No, I'll feed it pre-frozen. That was the one thing where I was like, oh, I couldn't watch the snake hunt. But my favorite part of what I learned about snakes yesterday is they eat one mouse a week, or the ball python starts by eating one mouse a week. And then the day it eats, it doesn't. Snakes don't like when you watch them eat, which I can relate with.
That's awesome.
And
shame.
Yeah, so you put the food in there and then you're not supposed to look at them
just
or try to hang out with them for a whole day. They're like, the day the snake eats, let it be.
It's just such
otherwise
a bitch.
What?
It's just, if you jostle, I guess, a python when it's digesting a mouse the first day, because that's all they eat all week.
Right.
It can fuck up their digestive tract. So you're just emotionally, they're don't watch me eat,
diva,
but then they're
python.
I love it.
Too diva for me.
I love
although
it.
A snake for you is very on brand.
A high maintenance snake, come on.
That eventually becomes your demise. You're like, I don't know.
I can't wait. It becomes an Ariana Grande sized snake. They get to be 5 feet long, which I'm like, I need a smaller snake. We're
I like my
need a
snakes
smaller
compared
snake.
To Ariana Grande's. How many Ariana Grande's will this snake be?
That snake could eat Ariana Grande.
Right.
But don't touch it.
Lil Zam, what is something that's overrated?
Oh, overrated. This is a fun Bechdel cast shout out. My overrated would be watching The Matrix. I've never watched The Matrix, and some listeners went back to our Matrix episode, which is a year and a half ago. And I casually mentioned on one episode, I was like, oh yeah, there's one episode where I never watched the movie anyways. And people went back and listened to how I talked on that episode, and it is psycho.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm just very quietly piggybacking on everything Caitlin said.
That's so true, Caitlin.
Yeah, she's like, Trinity is the female lead. I'm like, yes.
And I mean, and someone almost consider her the star, actually, in some respects. Okay.
Right. They're like, Jamie, did you like The Matrix? And I was like, hard to know.
Wow.
Just a bunch of
reshaking a magic eight ball under the table.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's a hacker text.
Yeah.
Right.
And I have not seen it. And so as a hacker who also codes, it is my greatest shame.
It would,
but overrated watching it.
In a way, it probably would really change the way you look at computers and how people interact. There's just some shit. It's like, I need to learn how to fly a helicopter. And it's like,
0001111.
Yeah, just one little bit of an eye roll, and they're like, let's go. And you're like, whoa, like that?
He's glitching.
I've never watched the second and third Matrix.
Wow.
Very okay with that.
That's fine.
I mean, I don't care. Yeah, I don't know why. I'm wow.
I finally watched Hackers in full, the Matthew Lillard text. God, Hackers is great. Yeah. Matthew Lillard in Hackers specifically, unbelievable. I have a theory that Matthew Lillard's character in Hackers cannot read, because there's several scenes where he'll ask someone to read something to him, and then there's another scene where he's like, so what do you think that book's about?
Sounds like you watching The Matrix. You're talking about The Matrix. Like,
yes.
One thing I will say is for The Matrix Reloaded has one of the wildest car chase scenes in it.
Right.
That's worth watching.
That's what everybody really says.
And they built a fake loop freeway, basically, so they could just do this whole stunt, like,
oh, that's
and
cool.
not fuck up a real freeway. It's very in-depth. But again, that's a movie where, like, you could just watch the YouTube clips and be like, right. okay, that's yeah, tight. Yeah. Bye. Yeah.
No interest in watching it. Enjoyed being subtweeted at all weekend.
Yeah.
Of
hey, why watch it when you live it? You yeah, know what exactly. I'm saying?
It's true. Like, I don't want to watch a documentary about my life.
What is something that's underrated?
Oh, underrated. John Patrick Shanley's Twitter account. John Patrick Shanley is a Pulitzer-winning playwright of Doubt, my favorite movie, okay. my favorite play. He has a wild, like, it's just like old guy Twitter, where he tweets good morning and good night.
Every day?
Every day.
Oh, I love
and
that.
Always attaches like a dusty JPEG of a moon or a sun. But like, and then sometimes a selfie. Look, good night.
Oh, wow.
I really...
He's like smirking. Like, I guess good night.
He is also the most appropriately named person ever. Like when you look at his picture, John Patrick Shanley.
Yeah, like if you showed it to me, I would probably somehow be inspired by God and I would be like, John Patrick Shanley? I don't know. That's what it feels like to me.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, 3 hours ago, because he lives on the East Coast. He's a New York boy. He's a theater man.
Oh, yep. Mm-hmm.
He dusted off his Pulitzer, found an old ass oil painting of a woman waking up, and then fires off another one.
Let me see.
Good morning. From JPS. I really love my good mornings and my good nights from John Patrick Shanley. Highly recommend
a
follow.
You should get blocked by him.
I should start tweeting horrible yeah. things at him.
Or just be really into it that he's like, I'm a little bit concerned about your enthusiasm for my Twitter.
Sometimes I just tweet at his good morning and good night and say, thank you, John. Love, Doubt.
Big fan.
Yeah.
Fan. And what's a myth?
Great. Oh, the myth is also snake related, which is I was curious if snakes could have friends, because there's this whole like snakes seem unfriendly. Snakes can have friends.
Like,
I've done the research.
Outside of their own species?
Yes. Well, but specifically with...
That's what I'm interested in. That's my favorite genre of video.
There's this wild thread on Reddit of like people going back and forth on can snakes feel love, or are they just trying to get closer to you because they want to kill you?
Or the warmth or whatever, yeah.
Right, where it's like, my snake keeps coiling around me because it loves me. It's like, no, it's just getting your scent and it wants to unhinge its jaw and eat your head. And, you know, I
That's
see
true
both
of
sides.
Cats.
On both sides. Yeah, well, because there's that thing with, like, cat shit is, like, supposed to make you mm-hmm. love it.
Yes.
So, like, cats could be really ugly and we just don't know.
Toxoplasmosa gondii.
T. Gandhi.
T. Gandhi.
God bless mm-hmm. you.
It makes rats sexually attracted to the smell of cat urine. And there's a theory that it makes humans, like, attracted to cats.
Yeah, and like that could be the basis for crazy cat person syndrome.
Right.
I think I've talked about this before. There was like that whole thing where my cat would like have sex with my feet every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
it.
So is
just
that
claiming
related
you.
Or
yeah.
is that different?
I'm well, sorry. That's what?
That's your cat getting its scent on you. You
when was
that?
This? Were you talking about this on here?
I talked about this, yeah.
With yeah. Completion, right?
To completion, where yeah. I'd be like, Dad, where are my feet wet at night after a
I must have blocked it
in.
Out because yeah. it's so upsetting to even hear right now.
I would have cat come on my feet every night from ages
oh
8
God.
To 18.
yeah.
Put that on your wiki feet profile.
yeah, no.
The foot freaks would go wild for that yeah. one.
Cat behaviorists say that a lot of their behavior is just them being like, yeah, I own you, okay?
Right.
Like, and they're yeah. like, they're almost like disappointed owners of the humans who think that they own them. Like they rub their scent on them. They bring you animals like that they've killed and like line them up on your porch. And they're like, okay, now eat it. Like it's almost
right,
like
right.
they're initiating you. Like what?
Oh.
Let me see if this bitch is like, good enough to like actually, you know,
wow.
kill this motherfucker.
I love it.
Yo, because my mom's cats flex on her all the time because they bring in all kinds of animals into the house.
Yeah. And the meow,
really?
And the meow is specifically engineered to sound like a baby crying, to like hack into that part of our brain. So cats are the ultimate hackers.
Oh yes. Snakes aren't hackers. snakes are, but they are friends. And so,
but they are friends.
I'm out here killing the snake stigma. Women can snake too, and snake have friend with each other, and don't look up snake.
I wonder because it's just so phallic, you know,
right.
that's why like. It's just like, yeah, it's this big moving dick pet.
There is like, look at my throbbing dick pet.
Dick pet.
Like, and there is a, you know, it's
my
like,
dick's small, but look at this gigantic dick I'm walking
right.
around.
When I see a snake, I do think who is selling, like the person who owns a snake is probably selling weed to middle schoolers.
Or the right. snake.
Yeah, or the snake. But there is a drug dealer, a low-key drug dealer vibe to the snakes. But I think we can really turn that around.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like if you brought a snake out in public, you would be not only one of the first women to do so, but also one of the first people who was not wearing almost like 50% of their clothing leather to do that. That would be a dope
also,
it seems like a hacker pet.
Yeah.
Prepare yourself for a lot of people being like, hey, can I take a picture?
Right.
Can I take a picture
That's
of your
a thing.
Snake?
Yeah.
Listen,
you gotta get an ugly snake. People don't.
I'll get a hideous snake. I'm not even against starting an Instagram for a snake, but it's a love thing.
Or like a defanged, no poison rattlesnake. So they're like, oh my God. Just like,
I want a snake fanny pack and just keep my snake in there and then be like, guys, check this shit out. And then it'll be like, the twist is she had a snake.
Yeah, the whole time.
The whole time.
All right, guys, let's check in with the charts. What do you say?
I would love it.
See the chart. What's top in the charts, Casey Kasem?
So on the book chart, this is something that we haven't really looked at up to this
point.
They
make chart for book?
Yeah, they make chart for book on Amazon.
Wow.
And one of the top books right now is The Russia Hoax, The Illicit Scheme to Clear Hillary Clinton and Frame Donald Trump.
Yeah.
By Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett.
Greg 2Gs. Love it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Old 2Gs.
Gregig.
Gregignant.
Gregignant.
It's getting amazing user reviews, but...
what are their user reviews like?
Just in love.
Yeah.
But they like try and do the soft sell. Like the top user review that is 5 stars is like, hey, I know like you guys might not like Trump, but you should check this book out. Give it a read if you like to read. It's really good, easy read. Like you'll love it. It's just entertaining. And like if you want to know the truth, you should read this because you're all sheeple.
whoa. What was that last part?
And PolitiFact just debunked like a ton of the crazy things that the book claims.
I mean, this is
apparently it's wildly out of date already.
Right.
When did it come out?
Like a month
ago. Oh, amazing. Right. Good.
Well, yeah, especially with the pace of this thing. I guess it's true. It's like an emerging market for the left and the right, or these sort of like opiate books that either help you believe that the White House is a total fucking dumpster fire, but then added stuff that make you get like, oh, yeah, it's got to end awful for this motherfucker. And then on the other side, it's like the QAnon shit or this stuff. It's like, nah. It's all good, guys. It's all going to be fine.
Everyone gets a check.
Yeah.
The complete ketogenic diet. So shout out to Iffy because he's talked about that before on the
Mr.
podcast.
Keto.
But that's the new diet fad, right? Where you just eat.
Just put your body in a state of ketosis where your body burns fat.
What's ketosis?
Yeah. Well, it's basically where you go into a state where normally you burn carbohydrates for your energy. But if you don't eat any carbohydrates, your body will then start burning its fat reserves for energy.
Okay.
And then you're passively shedding your weight.
So you're just not eating carbs.
You're not eating carbs, but you're also eating a ton of fat and things like that because that's your new fuel. And like you're trying to get your body to switch energy sources.
Oh, that's great.
You just eat
KFC
skin.
My dad did fucking turn into a rail thin dude.
Right.
And like to the point where he's like, I need to stop.
Yeah.
I'm too keto.
If you want to look like Iggy Pop, this is a good diet.
Ooh, the Iggy Pop diet.
But then I hear, but there's a lot of, I don't know, people talk bad about it. I don't know where the science community has fully landed, but I think it's, to this point, people like it.
Yeah, and it's big out here. Like, you hear it on a regular basis. People talk about,
I'm keto.
1984 is still in the top 50, which, I mean, that's a long time because it was written in 1984.
1948.
Right?
No.
4884.
Whoa. Pretty cool. Ever heard of it? Pretty cool.
What's
isn't that based off his travel to somewhere?
I think it's travels like in Eastern Bloc.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, where he totally blew his mind. He's like, okay, I think I know what I'm going to write about now.
Yeah, yeah. And this book that was mentioned on Friday's episode by guest Kirby Hal
Baptiste,
The Four Agreements, A Practical Guide to Personal Wisdom. I went on a deep rabbit hole on this because it is the modern The Secret. I've heard it talked about by people who are fans of self-help literature, mm-hmm. and it has four basic ideas that you're supposed to agree with, like use your words wisely and basic stuff, but like make the focus.
Make you think.
Yeah, make you think. Mm-hmm. But it's based, the thing that I like about it, that might just be a scam by the author, but it's supposedly based on Toltec wisdom, which is like they're the predecessors of the Aztecs.
And, I've seen Legends of the Hidden Temple, bro. Right, right. I know about Toltec.
Exactly. So like Legends of the Hidden Temple.
The big head from the
Legend, that's actually Olmec.
You read a book?
Right.
Yeah, that's Olmec.
But yeah, I mean, we have all of these cultures in America that we, you know, basically paved over. But they did have written traditions. They're just, they haven't been fully translated yet. But there's a whole entire library of ideas and philosophies and art and knowledge that's out there from a part of the world that was completely cut off from a lot of the world that we have studied up to this point. So it seems like, I don't know, it's a promising idea to me. I don't know enough about the book.
I love self-help, and I love how it's just like, be nice.
Yeah.
The Secret I was very into. My mom was deeply into it. She had a major thing with, like, spoiler alert for The Secret. Like, don't tell anyone what The Secret is.
Because it was, like, a competitive advantage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I was like, mom, it's the most popular book in the world.
She's
like,
don't tell anyone.
Oprah, shut up.
Shut the fuck up, Oprah. I guess all those self-help books really just boil down to, go easy on yourself.
Yeah, a lot of them,
like,
do.
In a way, like, it all, you sort of arrive at the same place, like, I need to relax a little bit more. I need to go easier on myself.
Yeah.
Things are not as bad as I'm always making them out to be, and things will improve from that.
That's a big one from the Four Agreements. One of them is, that we have these built-in sort of ideas from our parents that are, like, when you actually examine them, the reasons we get mad at ourselves are really stupid.
Really, yeah. Like my ED, you know.
Right. Just, yeah, it's like,
I can't control that. You know?
Well, The Secret I love because it's just like, if you want a car, every day say to yourself, I want a car. And then one day, car shows up. Self-driving car, a Tesla just pulls itself into your bedroom.
Beep, beep, beep. Hi, here for you.
I want a car. Siri, I want a car.
Give me the car.
Miles, it's not your fault. Box office, guys. Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
Dominated.
Yay. I'm so excited to see it. Has anyone seen it yet?
Miles
I saw it.
Did you love it?
It's one of the best rom-coms I've ever seen.
I love rom-coms.
It's, like I said on, I think, Friday's show, the rom part of the rom-com touched me, and the com part was fully delivered on the comedy, the romance.
Yay.
You know,
yeah. And this is the first rom-com in 3 years to actually be a big success. The last movie that topped 20 million was Trainwreck, which was a long time ago.
That movie already does not hold up very well.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Wild how it already seems like a movie that came out 10 years ago.
Yeah. So
what about Mile 22, bro?
It's like we got to talk about
Miles 22. Well.
Miles 22.
Miles is 22, bro. You better be careful, bro. You better be careful, bro. At the box office, bro. Don't beat me, bro.
It pulled in a disappointing $13.6 million. Sounds like a lot of money.
That is a lot of money, bro.
You know, $34 million for Crazy Rich Asians, $13 million for...
Yeah, but Asians are rich, bro.
For Mile 22. But the movie cost between $30 and $50 million to produce, and they usually double that.
Don't forget about the marketing.
Marketing, so that's
$60
to $100 million. And they were counting on this being the first chapter in a series of Mile 22,
Mile 23,
Mile
23,
Mile 24, Mile 25, up to Mile 678.
And it's not looking good for that. It was basically in line with the weekend opener Alpha, which is just about the first human dog friendship. I think.
What
based
about
on the
human
preview.
Snake friendship?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the sequel. that is now going to come out. And then in music, I don't know why.
Yeah, wow.
had trouble getting catching? That one out.
Jack just had a seizure.
Jack, please lift both hands above your head, smile, and say a sentence. We want to make sure you haven't had a stroke.
Nicki Minaj's album came out last week. It is doing disappointing, Lee.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
It got beat by Travis Scott's Astroworld, which was in its second week of release. And people are talking about how her co-signing Tekashi 6ix9ine is not good.
I mean, that's
that is
an extremely
awful
bad
look for
that
somebody.
Is
music.
The worst possible. Like, here's my new album. Also, I love my raping friend, and you're just like, what? Can you not do that?
Yeah. So that's not good, and especially now that she is being implicated in domestic violence rumors with Safari.
Right.
So, and then. I just want to talk about a trend I'm seeing on Google that makes me want to tell everybody to try harder, where the number one search over the weekend was Nick Jonas, because he had a big party. He had an engagement party. And like that was the thing last week. The big search last week was one of the Jenners for turning 21. So we're now just like Googling people whose parties we wish we had gone to or something.
Oh, my God.
I do like that we've reached that part of dystopia of like, right. I just want to see pictures of party.
I want to go to party.
Please show me Google images of party.
Well, right. It just it helps you escape whatever your own situation is.
Right.
And, like, that's why you know, like, pretty soon. Motherfuckers are just going to be wearing VR headsets and be like, leave me alone.
Right.
Right.
I don't want to exist out of whatever's actually
happening.
Well,
I genuinely think that that's why, like, astrology has had such a big, like, resurgence in the past year or so is just, like, good old-fashioned escapism of, like, people just need things to feel nice about.
Yeah.
Nick Jonas had party. Good for him.
On the 5th, I will meet someone who will change my life.
Right.
Not unless they're a Pisces. Keep them away.
Keep them away. They're dangerous.
Hey, speaking of someone who's going to change your life, we've got Jared on the blower. We're going to go to a break. We'll be right back with Jared Holt from Right Wing Watch. And we're back, and we are joined by Jared Holt from Right Wing Watch. What's up, Jared?
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Oh, anytime. It's our pleasure. It's our privilege to have you on.
So you are going to tell us about the Alex Jones saga, your involvement therewith. What happened with this Alex Jones character? I think our audience knows who he is, but tell us how you got involved.
Yeah, so it's been a pretty rough couple of weeks for Alex Jones and the InfoWars staff. A lot of prominent social media platforms like Facebook, YouTube. What else? It's hard to think of like what he is still on.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he tried to go on Vimeo, right? And he got booted off Vimeo.
Really?
Like Pornhub. Like,
yeah. Ooh, God.
Yeah. I think it was YouPorn or Pornhub or something kicked Alex Jones off because they tried to do what these gun channels did on YouTube, where they went over and started uploading to porn websites. But
well, there are only so many videos of gaping assholes that people can stand watching.
It's
Swish!
Miles Gray, everybody.
Yeah, and this kind of got kicked off a little bit by accident by me. I was on Spotify one day looking at the podcast section, and I happened to cross InfoWars on Spotify. And then shortly after, Alex Jones had tweeted out a link to his Spotify page, and that alerted me to more InfoWars podcasts that were on the platform. And as somebody who has my own podcast, plug real quick, I know that getting on Spotify can be a little bit tricky if you are a smaller podcast. So I thought it was weird that InfoWars had been able to get on seemingly without a hitch, and I tweeted about it, and then that sort of added into, you know, like years-long frustrations and work of other progressive groups that have been demanding that social media platforms enforce their terms of service on InfoWars when they seemingly have been reluctant to do so for so long.
Right.
And that kind of snowballed. It was amplified by groups like Sleeping Giants. And, you know, here we are today, weeks later.
Yeah,
and
you got kicked the fuck off
everything. As somebody who researches this kind of stuff for a living, it's actually had this weird inverse effect where it's become a lot harder for me to find what I need to find just because it's not on anything.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So what do you see sort of the future of all this stuff going? Because, yeah, for people who don't know, I mean, you've been on the show before, but your expertise is in the area of sort of keeping tabs on what the alt-right and super right-wing groups are up to on the internet and stuff like that. You know, I know that he has the app and stuff like that, and nutraceuticals are like half off, but like where do they go from here?
I mean, the thing was, Alex Jones was able to exist in the capacity that he was for so long that he has, you know, thousands, if not millions, of dedicated hardcore listeners that will jump through the hoops to try to find InfoWars broadcast wherever they are online.
Right.
But what this did was take InfoWars out of the sort of mainstream online, you know, discourse, if you will, and, you know, has sort of mitigated the harm that bad actors like Alex Jones have on the information space. I think, you know, InfoWars is trying something with Snapchat right now. They have their app, which is popular in the App Store at the moment, but I think that, you know, in weeks to come, we'll see that fade as the Streisand effect begins to wean down. But
can you explain what the Streisand effect is?
Is that just being a really good singer?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. it goes back to, I guess there was some thing where, like, Barbara Streisand didn't want people to know where her house was, and because it became like a big public ordeal of like, do not look up my house, everybody went to look up the house.
Right.
So
I
think InfoWars is having sort of a similar effect where it's like they're putting out these claims like, this is the broadcast that nobody wants you to see, so there's sort of like a natural gravitation towards it, I think, with some people. But you know, given what I know about InfoWars, having watched nearly every broadcast for the past few years, it's hard for me to imagine that, like, your general Joe Schmo, who, you know, gets curious about InfoWars and starts watching it, is going to stay along, like, right, stay around very long, because a lot of it is just so outrageous.
So if you're watching InfoWars every day, how do you self-care? Do you go on walks, or do you go to the gym? How do you take care of yourself?
Well, I take 3 capsules of InfoWars Brain Force Plus.
Perfect.
And that really that clears my mind.
Is there something that we, as people who have not just been streamlining InfoWars content, like, wouldn't expect about InfoWars that you know based on that horrible thing that you've done for our sake?
Something that a lot of people don't know is that Alex Jones actually has like a bootleg radio station or network, rather. And he's also syndicated on a lot of talk radio shows. His whole thing is that the ad blocks where he's normally selling his brain pills that help me maintain a good work-life balance, you know, he gives that space to broadcasters. So essentially he makes it to where if you're a radio station and you pick up the Alex Jones show, you get free content and you get those ad blocks entirely for your own advertisers.
Oh, interesting. Whoa.
So he doesn't make money off of that. It's just him being like, I need more people to believe my bullshit, so I'm going to give it out there for free.
Yeah, the self-professed mission of InfoWars, right, is that there's a war on your mind, information war. Mm-hmm. And
if you will.
If you will.
Oh, info is short for information. Yeah. Okay, got it.
We're breaking all kinds of news on this show right now.
And then it makes a lot more sense when you think about it that way.
Yeah, so his vendetta is to, like, get his word out and sort of create this alternate reality that he can then lure people into and then sell the products or get donations.
Right.
Or, you know, it used to be like ad revenue, but their advertising people dropped them recently. So ultimately, like, Alex Jones wants to get InfoWars into the mainstream. And wow. I think, you know, he's willing to take a loss in a lot of ways to do that.
What do you think about the whole free speech argument that came up out of this? I know, like, there were some liberals who were like, oh, this is dangerous. Like, this could make him stronger. On the right, it was just like, oh, this is censorship. Like, you know, nothing he's saying is dangerous. Well, how do you... you know, obviously you that's a defense that many people on the extreme far right employ or deploy to defend themselves. How do you sort of look at that, and what's the talk amongst you guys at Right Wing Watch about all that?
I mean, it's not really a free speech issue because Alex Jones is still allowed to talk his say. He just, you know, isn't allowed to publish on these platforms that have established rules for user conduct. And, you know, I don't think that's a free speech issue. But it is interesting because it sort of raises this bigger discussion, I think, about, like, how much power is invested in these private companies online.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how these social media companies, like, this is different because it's a very clear violation of the rules they set out, and Alex Jones does a lot of harm. Like the Sandy Hook parents that are suing him now had to move around a lot. His lawyers tried to make their addresses public so that they could be put out to the InfoWars fan base. You know, he's wrecking a lot of harm, and that's not a free speech issue. But it is interesting to think that, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Google, whatever, could essentially just lights out somebody's speech based on their bottom line or at the whim of their executives. So I think that's sort of a different but, like, bigger important conversation about how much power we give tech companies and, like, whether or not they should be regulated. And I think that's an important, interesting conversation to have. But I don't think that, you know, this censorship, free speech argument necessarily works here.
Right.
I find a lot of people that make this argument don't bring up what Alex Jones has actually done and
said.
Yeah,
the thing that finally got him banned from Twitter was telling people to get rifles by their beds and get ready to fight, like, people who, you know, are anti-InfoWars. So, like, they were like, oh, that's an incitement to actual literal violence. Like, that's not really a metaphor at that point. And I mean, yeah, with the free speech thing, these are public companies, right? And so, you know, if they have user terms that are like, you can't say anything bad about Facebook or we'll ban you, and they start banning people because they say something bad about Facebook or one of the political parties or something, then, you know, I think they would be rightly attacked in the media and, you know, it would be bad for their bottom line. Or at least this is how the system's supposed to work. But, like, as of right now, their terms of service don't, like, incite acts of violence on people and don't, like, try and harm people's lives, which is pretty down the middle.
A lot of this feels like if we, like, revisit stories like this in a couple of years, it just seems like laws that don't exist yet and, like, policies that don't exist where, like, there's all this, like, noise and dissonance between, like, social media companies and how they operate and, like, how they regulate their users. And I feel like at some point there's got to be some sort of, like, policy put into place that can, I don't know, just, like, give at least a yardstick of, like, here's what is acceptable, here isn't, because it just, like, doesn't make sense.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, some politicians want them regulated, like utilities, like their water or electricity or something like that, because it's just, you know, a thing that they think should be taken for granted. But
it's just a lot of, I don't know, there's just a lot of blind spots.
So, Jared, what do you think? You know, a lot of people were like, oh, well, this is going to make Alex Jones stronger by doing this. Like, it's going to really rile people up. After, like, looking at the last couple weeks and still watching, what's the assessment of the state of the InfoWars empire?
They are freaking out, but they want you to know that they're not freaking out.
Right.
I can relate with that.
Like people that get on, it's like people that get online and they're like, just so you know, I'm not mad. And then they write like 10 paragraphs. Like,
right.
Digging
Let me tell you how not mad I am.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of in disarray. A few of the smaller time hosts have sort of floated this idea that, like, they might not have jobs soon. I think there's maybe a little bit of worry that the InfoWars stuff will have to downsize. But they're not doing so great. They're boasting that they have like millions of new listeners, but I can't find anything that makes me believe that's the case.
Yeah. A lot of bluffing.
It seems to be the opposite.
Yeah. Ah, well, I mean, you know, he is a performance artist, so, you know, maybe he'll pivot on that.
He'll have to create a new character, like Sacha Baron Cohen.
Exactly, you know, exactly.
It's just a performance.
Yeah, what is Alex Jones's Bruno? That's what we're looking for.
I like to imagine it's like some sort of mix between like Post Malone and Alex Jones. I'm thinking SoundCloud Rap's the next thing.
Post Malone.
Oh, my God.
Jared, it's a pleasure having you. Thank you so much for taking the time. And yeah, hang in there.
Yeah, where can people find you and your amazing podcast and all the other work that you do?
I'm on Twitter at Jared L. Holt. I'm writing articles all the time for rightwingwatch.org. And I have my own podcast called Shitpost, which you can find on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are found.
Sweet. Tell people about your show.
Yeah, it's a weekly digest of just the weird underbelly of internet culture and how that plays out on a larger scale. We have a lot of guests on to talk about sort of tech culture news events, and it sort of comes at it with I think of it as like a Tabasco sweet, like super deluxe flavor, if you will.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Muy interesting.
We're intrigued.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, take care.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. And Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd had crazy face Rudy Giuliani.
Ugh, crazy Rudy's teeth rotting. Almost.
Yeah.
His soul, you know, he's sort of like Kellyanne Conway, too. You can tell that they, deep down, their soul knows it's wrong, and it's just mutiny. I don't actually know. Maybe Rudy's doesn't. I don't know. Whatever. It's not good to lie. It's not good for your face.
Right.
No.
I feel like...
And there's no better evidence than Rudy Giuliani's face.
I feel like his teeth are going to come out, and people are going to be like, oh, that's embarrassing, because we all know, like, he probably has dentures and it seems like he's like almost losing them all the time, but then like the rest of his skull is gonna come out of his mouth and people are gonna be like, oh no.
Theory, there's a really hot guy underneath there, and once his face drips off,
right.
Once the flesh starts so to hot. Fall off, it's like, oh, there's like a Beauty and the Beast situation. There's a hot man in there,
right? Anyways, so what happened, Miles?
So as Jared was saying at InfoWars, they are freaking out, but don't want you to know they're freaking out. And I would say that the very same thing is actually happening at the White House, because we got news this weekend that White House counsel Don McGahn is actually now a cooperating witness for Robert Mueller.
Right.
And he has spoken to like around 30 hours or more of basically chit chat with Robert Mueller about what he knows. And they say a lot of this is born out of the fear that Don McGahn feels that Trump was having him cooperate and talk to Mueller so he could eventually just throw McGahn under the bus and be like, no, it was McGahn the whole time that was doing all this because he's the lawyer. So McGahn's lawyer was like, I think we should go talk to Robert Mueller so I can tell Robert Mueller I had fucking nothing to do with any of this shit.
Yeah.
And so that report came out.
30 hours is so much conversation. That's 6 weeks of Zeitgeist episodes.
Thank you.
It's good that we. That's the only way I can think of things.
Yeah.
Right. How many Zeitgeist
episodes? Well, I was just trying to think. Like, have we spoken for 30 hours off mic?
You and I know.
Yeah. No.
I mean, if people saw what happens, we go to our respective rooms.
Yeah.
Mine's just the bathroom.
Yes.
Where I sob and Jack just lets wait upstairs.
Yeah.
Great
episode.
Yeah. It looks like the.
And then Jack starts drinking protein shakes and yelling.
Just our powder.
Yeah. Starts doing weird his own bench press gym, like American Beauty's garage gym. And anyway, so
a lot of time to talk is what we're saying.
Yeah, it's a lot of time, and you know the thing is that he has a lot to say when it comes to the obstruction case, because if they ever like lack really damning piece of evidence, it would probably come from Don McGahn, who was the lawyer advising them. And he has an understanding of the president's mindset in the days leading to the firing of James Comey, how the White House handled the firing of Michael Flynn, how Trump repeatedly berated like Jeff Sessions, tried to assert control over the investigation. There's just like a lot of stuff that he knows that if he's talking to Robert Mueller, that's a good. I mean, he's probably being like, oh, this is great. This is like, what was John Dean, who was Nixon's lawyer, who kind of did the same thing?
Well, so, yeah, John Dean and Nixon, like, called him out as a villain and tried to, like, use him as a fall guy. And so McGahn is specifically, or the New York Times report specifically says that McGahn, like, didn't want to be another John Dean. And so that's why he's doing this, because he's worried about Trump, like, turning, like, flipping on him.
Right.
And, like. Well, I don't know why he would think that, because Trump has shown such loyalty otherwise.
Yeah, and he's so calm. And as you can tell, the full court press was on the Sunday shows. And like on Sunday, the president was tweeting all kinds of weird shit about, he said like, oh, Mueller's like fucking, he makes McCarthy look like a puppy or whatever.
Right.
Interesting. Bro, you had the same lawyer as McCarthy.
Right.
Okay, first of
yeah,
all.
Yeah, like,
that's your boy.
Roy Cohn was your fucking lawyer. And also, you're the one out here pulling people's security clearances. Like, that's, you're actually punishing your political opponents. Anyway, so I think suffice it to say, they're freaking out at the White House. So deploy Agent Giuliani to the field, because he will dead all this shit with his fucking mind game. So this is him on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd. And wow, just try and keep up with this logic storm.
Look, I'm not going to be rushed into having him testify so that he gets trapped into perjury. And when you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry. Well, that's so silly, because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth. He didn't have a conversation.
Truth is
about,
truth. I don't mean to go like.
No, it isn't truth. Truth isn't truth. The president of the United States says, I didn't.
Truth is a truth. Mr. Mayor, do you realize what I
Shut up, sleepy eyes.
Wait, so the Klansman is black? Is that
the truth isn't truth. And then he goes on to be like, well, the president is going to say, I don't know what happened with the firing of James Comey. And then James Comey's going to tell Robert Mueller, oh, he did it because of this, this, and this. And Comey's best friends with Robert Mueller. So who do you think he's going to believe? And then Chuck Todd's like, well, maybe, what if he just went off who's been telling the truth more often recently and used that as his basis for determining whose word might carry more weight? And then Giuliani just like,
then all the bones in his face came out of his mouth.
Good for Rudy, though. Like, he really threw his name up there with the likes of Descartes and Plato, Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas, Immanuel Kant, to be like, truth isn't truth.
Right.
You know, like, what?
I'm not hungover anymore listening to that. My blood pressure is through the fucking roof after that. Holy shit.
Where are we? I mean, not to mention that Don McGahn, too, when we go back to the things that he knows and could have done, he was asked by Trump to be like, hey, can you fire Robert Mueller? Can you just do that for me? Because I'm a coward.
Yeah.
And he was like, absolutely not. I will resign if you ask me to do something like that. We cannot do anything like that. That is horribly illegal. And no. And that's when, like, they eased up on the Mueller firing talk. But again, you know, truth isn't truth. And that is a great defense. When you are, again, when you're defending yourself and you're throwing everything you got around you, that you're running out of things to throw, and now we're trying to redefine truth.
I just think, you know, truth isn't, I would just appreciate if Rudy Giuliani would credit me when he is quoting my tramp stamp.
It looks great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I really love, because it's cool, because it looks the same way right side up or upside down.
It is. Yeah, yeah. It is. It's a fully cursed image. The font is. Yeah. It's word art,
yeah,
basically.
It's word art. Thank you. Actually, no, it's truth isn't truth one way, and it's upside down. It says, fuck you, it isn't. Which is an amazing bit of word art.
Thank you so much.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just a very, you know, like, it was funny, like, how the Clinton-Lewinsky thing, like, came down to then arguing, like, what is sex?
Depends on what your definition of is.
You know what I mean? And now with this, we've whittled it down. We're down to the moment where we're like, well, what is truth? What is it, though? Is it what actually happened?
I'm so tired.
Or is it whose lie you want to, I don't know. Guys, Rudy,
so
you done it. And it'll be fun to see everyone clean up the mess from the inevitable internet fallout from that comment.
Yeah.
So you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I wanted to talk.
Gather around the
about
fire.
The heart. Gather around, children. So I wanted to kind of put this out to you guys and also to our listeners as more of like an ongoing conversation. But we've talked, I think, once in the past about how quicksand was like this constant metaphor in the 60s and early 70s. It was like all over the place in movies.
Yeah, I remember that.
The media called Vietnam a national quicksand. Like, that was their word for it. constantly. Like now you hear it referred to as a quagmire usually.
Right.
That just replaced that with quicksand. That's what they said at the time. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King Jr. used the metaphor of quicksand in his I Have a Dream speech. A reporter asked one of the astronauts who was about to land on the moon what they would do if the surface of the moon was quicksand. And just
makes
like
you think.
And people are like, yeah, what about that? So it was just this like national obsession, which is weird because quicksand isn't an actual like thing that occurs in nature. There are like sinkholes and
quicksand was real.
Wait, it isn't? I thought it is an actual phenomenon, right?
Of no, like not really.
Wet
quicksand when the
granular
sand
that just is when there's pressure on it, it just collapses on itself?
There is, but like you can just like step out of it. There's not a thing where you like the more you struggle, the more you fall down, like the
Jack,
more it sucks you
I
down.
I saw Bear Grylls
yeah.
save himself
also,
from
Bear
a quicksand
Grylls
pit.
Also, Bear Grylls is full of
shit. How
believe it or not.
Dare you?
Stop but, it. It's my birthday. Don't talk about Bear Grylls.
Don't ruin Bear Grylls for me.
But I feel like we've sort of edited it out of our history because it was just, it was like, it was kind of a perfect metaphor for the time because we were this unsuspecting, idealistic, protagonist country chugging along and then suddenly felt like ourselves get stuck and started sinking. And the more we struggled to free ourselves, the faster we sunk in terms of like Vietnam and hippies and, you know, great leaders who step up and seem to make a difference getting assassinated. It just seemed like after like all the idealism and optimism of the 50s, it seemed like it made sense
right
at the time. And then
it was more like a warning. It's like, I know times are good now, but quicksand could be ahead.
Well,
we've got to be careful.
It was like suddenly the country found itself sinking. They're like, what's happening? We're always right. We're America.
I wonder who is like the first person to popularize using that as a metaphor. They're just like sitting at home like, what if DeSantis
got it
fast?
Yeah. What if DeSantis was
faster?
But now when we look back on that, because it's not really a thing that's in movies anymore or really a thing that we like think about anymore, we've just like kind of edited it out. So like we know that it's in some movies and TV shows, but like none of those are classics, so we just don't think about it that much anymore. And I'm curious to like think about what our current moment's quicksand is, like what the metaphor is for this moment, that when in the future we look back, we're gonna be like, oh, that was fucking stupid, but like at the time it was just like so omnipresent that we just kind of took it for granted. And
right,
it'll probably not make sense in the future.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What like, do you had some pitches for us?
I got some pitches.
Okay.
So House of Cards is like a good quicksand style metaphor for the country because we had this facade of everything being great and built up, and it turns out it's.
It turns out that Kevin Spacey is
and
a criminal.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, okay. Literally, the show House of Cards was a metaphor for itself.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't totally work because that's been a prevalent metaphor for decades. And
okay, good. That was my note for that.
Okay.
Pitch. Okay, great. So let's move on to that.
Wizards, same deal. It was like people were obsessed with wizards for the past couple decades because of Harry Potter, but I feel like that people have been obsessed with wizards for a long time, and the only thing that was new is that they were young. There was like someone was like, what if the LeBron James of wizards?
The wizard small.
Yeah, what if the wizard not old?
Comma, genius.
So my two main pitches, but I don't have them fully fleshed out. Crime boss or like mafia head slash mobster, because I think, first of all, we have sort of elected one to the presidency in Trump. He's like the head of a crime family. They're the stars of our prestige TV shows like Breaking Bad and The Sopranos. They're a perfect metaphor for what we're finding out about capitalism, like putting on a good face on a day-to-day basis, like acting like they value the same thing as us, and secretly these capitalist overlords are running a criminal organization that robs and murders people.
Yeah, okay.
For that?
Yeah.
I think just like, and shout out Lazy, the scammer narrative in general.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
very resonant with our times.
Right. The grifter.
Yeah.
America is snake oil.
Yeah.
America is snake.
Is snake.
But don't tread on the snake.
Don't tread on me.
Snake culture is under attack.
And I think, you know, mobsters have been around for a while, but they also like when you look at how they behave in reality versus the movie depictions, they're not these smart people with values, and they're usually very simple, disloyal narcissists. And so we had to invent all the like great, complex, smart, loyal mobsters that we obsess over.
Right.
But, you know, the only thing is, I feel like I don't think it's going to be like Quicksand, because I think people will probably still be obsessed with that going forward.
Oh, yeah. There'll always be crime and mobsters.
Yeah. And they've been in movies since
the 40s. I think a better, I mean, I don't, I can't really think of like a pop culture thing, but I look at America as being an old abandoned theme park where fun used to be had.
Right.
And the infrastructure was there at one point, but it's all rotting away and no one really is that interested anymore.
Too many deaths in the wave pool.
Yeah, no benefits for the workers. They quit on the job and the theme park has been left to rot and turn into a big spider party.
Ooh,
yeah, or
God,
I mean,
chilling.
Just like post-apocalyptic landscapes, I think, in general. And,
yeah,
you know, partially amusement parks if you're focusing on the Scooby-Doo universe, but mm-hmm. all around just abandoned landscapes.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that could work. Superheroes seems like an obvious one because they will probably look really stupid at some point in the future, but mm-hmm. I don't know. What were you going to say, Jamie?
I think Zamboni.
Zamboni, interesting.
Go on, I like this.
That one was at the tip of my tongue.
Come on, work this one out.
I hope I'm not stepping on anyone's toes by saying America Zamboni metaphor.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, okay, so you got the Zamboni, right?
Uh-huh.
American company, that's good.
Uh-huh.
So the ice is getting a little rough.
What is the ice? Is this us?
The national mood is,
okay, is the ice.
The ice. Ice. We've been out for a whole period and there were some fights.
People skating it up.
Scoring, but also some fights.
Right.
Couple scores, couple of fights, and then it's like the ice
World
is getting
II.
Rough.
Yep.
We need a break.
Uh-huh.
We need a break, and then
Vietnam.
It's break time. Need a snack. Everyone gets off the ice. In comes Zamboni.
It's America.
A really attractive, cool vehicle.
Cold War.
Uh-huh.
It's cold.
Okay. Right.
Like the mood is
uh-huh.
cold.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Everyone's got pretzels and fries, and Zamboni comes out and just smooths that. We're waiting for a Zamboni that's never gonna come.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
The ice is rough, and it's just the ice. You don't get a second ice.
Right.
You know?
I think we solved it. Never mind. I don't want to hear from anybody else.
Based I'm having a panic attack.
I mean, I'll be honest, man. That's a no for me, dog.
That's a no for you, dog. Unbelievable. A little pitchy. A little pitchy for you.
A little too wordy, man. Just get right to it. Pitchy. You know, I don't got to. Yeah, go for Brett. Hold on. I got to take this call.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know. I just got some crazy fucking pitch about a Zamboni. all right.
Well, that was fun. Jamie, it's been a pleasure having you as always. Where can people find you?
Go find me at Jamie Loftus Help on Twitter, Jamie Cray Superstar, Instagram. Listen to Bechdelcast. And I have a new show on Super Deluxe called Robot Takeover.
Robot Takeover.
Yeah.
If you love hearing her sickly voice.
Yeah, I've been getting so much shit about that. Yeah, the first two episodes we filmed when I'm kind of visibly ill, and I sound very sick, and people were just like, yo, what happened to Loftus? What happened to her? Did Tabasco Sweet kill her? Like, what happened to
her? Take her soul? Is that her real voice?
Is that her real voice? Or wait, regular Jamie is a character? Lots of wild theories. Anyways, watch the show, please. It's on YouTube.com.
And is there a tweet you've been enjoying?
It's hard to say the John Patrick Shanley goodnight tweet, because there is one every night. I would recommend last night's goodnight tweet, where it's a very tired looking John Patrick Shanley smirking at you saying goodnight. It's an up angle. I think it was a brave of him to post this picture. I would like to think he took the picture by mistake, and this is just a picture of how he feels when he does the goodnight tweet. August 17th goodnight tweet is a go for me.
And that was the one that I saw and said no picture has ever been more appropriate to someone's name than that picture. So,
and also his Twitter is at John J.P. Shanley, which is redundant.
At John J.P. Shanley.
John J.P. Patrick Shanley.
awesome. Miles.
Hi.
Hey, where can people find you? And what's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Oh, gosh. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And a tweet I was really liking is from Ashley Parker. It just says, approximately 5 hours into family vacation and risk of patricide is high. yeah, for anyone who's been on a family vacation, especially as an adult, you start like being like, who the fuck is my family? So yes, shout out to you, Ashley.
All right. A tweet I've been enjoying from Jabuki Young White is Black Klansman spoiler. It is hard to believe that an undercover cop went to a KKK meeting and none of his coworkers were there, which is very zeitgeisty. Boots Riley just tweeted out a critique of Black Klansman. He is the director of Sorry to Bother You. And you can follow me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. You can also find those footnotes in the description of the episode that you're listening to right now. If you just look at more information. Footnotes are where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode. Miles.
Yeah.
It's also where we link off to the song that we ride out on. What's that going to be today?
All right. What are we going out on?
Today, let's go out on some Cali Uchis. This track is not like, she has an album, Isolation, that's really good. But one of the tracks I'm really liking is like a sort of an interlude. It's called Coming Home - Interlude. You kind of get two songs for one. I really like the second half of the song. First half is good too. But this is just a little Cali Uchis for you to enjoy on this Monday.
Yeah, happy Monday, everyone.
Yeah, and I hope you like the new morning availability of the show. Also, go to tpublic.com/thedailyzeitgeist and buy the merch.
Hot new merch.
You can also go to tpublic.com/Bechdelcast, too, and get that Bechdelcast merch. We all got all the
merch. I just got my ethnically ambiguous tank top in the mail yesterday.
You guys, I hate to say this, but three of our shows have the best merch.
Yeah, we
Zeitgang.
Do.
Zeitgang. The feminist icon shirt is so dope on Bechdelcast, and Ethnically Ambiguous has the fire merch.
I got the eyebrow shirt.
Logo eyes.
Yeah.
Logo eyes.
Logo eyes.
And that's me telling the rest of our network to step it the fuck up.
Oh, yeah.
You go. No, I'm just joking. Yeah. I like all the merch. But, all right,
he's
we're
just
gonna ride
this
out.
We're, in the room.
We're gonna ride out on the song that Miles described. Like,
oh, so you don't remember
the
song, Jack? Wow.
We'll be back tomorrow with more.
He doesn't listen to me.
Podcast.
Jack just started drinking a protein shake and flipping
Bye.
Us off.
Out, Miles.
Looking back, now thinking maybe I was wrong. I've been so out of place and it's been for so long. I wrote about it, think I made a billion songs, but none.